Chapter 2, The Old Man.
Now, are you insane?
Come on, Fred. You did it for us before.
I did it to appease you, to stop you from reminding me for the zillionth time that you saved the multiverse. I did it once. It was not meant to set a precedent.
And yet it has.
No, and that's final. And you're supposed to be writing a book. Didn't you get all the emails?
Fred, my boss's boss, is standing there, tapping his foot, red-faced, in the middle of the New Yorker Hotel's third floor room 3327, a.k.a. the Interdimensional Transfer Apparatus, in all caps, of course, a.k.a. the bridge to the Starship Enterprise. While Gigi and Hannah and Bobo run around his legs, giggling, actually they're running around all the Shrug team's legs, the guys in the white suits who always seem to be milling around aimlessly, and as a group they sort of shrug on cue and drift away into the corners of the room, I assume waiting for the command from Fred to once again get him a cup of coffee, so he can allow two children and an officially non-existent alien to take an unauthorized trip into the most dangerous device on the planet. I pick up the journal of Nikola Tesla, 1941, to blank. Oh, I'll need this to let him know we're coming. He slaps the journal down.
You are not going in there. Get out of here, now.
Pete winks at me and pats him on the shoulder.
If you say so, boss.
He points down to the kids and Bobo.
We'll be back at 11 to pick up the little angels.
We grin at each other and leave the hotel room as Fred shouts after us, and the 100 or so deadbolts lock him in with our human tornadoes. I mean, angels. We stand right outside the door.
You're a genius, Pete.
I know. Now, how long do you give him?
As he says this, the inevitable wailing begins.
Fred? $10 he doesn't last 30 seconds. I say he lasts more than 30 seconds, but less than a minute.
45 seconds later, the door swings open, and I hand Pete a $10 bill, and Fred grumbles,
I can't believe I haven't been fired already, but this will certainly do it.
I love you, Fred.
Well, I don't love you right now, either of you. Let's get this over with.
He guides us back to the Star Closet thingy, and one of the Shrug Team guys, I swear for the first time ever, actually speaks.
Mr. Morris, sir, isn't this when you ask us to go out and get you a cup of coffee?
Fred's in too much of a flustered rush, ignoring him, looking down at his watch.
All right, you have 5 minutes. I'm not kidding. In and out. Say your hellos and your goodbyes, and that's it. You hear me?
The Shrug Team guy tugs at his shirt sleeve gently.
Mr. Morris, sir, shouldn't they at least have clean suits on?
Fred realizes he's broken the unspoken Shrug Team protocol, so he shouts,
Out! You and the others, go get me a cup of coffee.
The guy looks at me and whispers, That's more like it. And him and the team skedaddle. God, I love that word, skedaddle. Wait, is that even an actual word? And Fred pushes us all into the Star Closet. Then, with that familiar whoosh, the ITA door opens, and, without anyone hitting their heads, maybe for the first time ever, we're inside. Fred still looks pissed as the door closes, but Gigi waves bye-bye to him, and the last thing I see is Fred's mouth curling up into a grin and his little piggies waving back like a favorite uncle to his favorite niece. That's Fred. He's the man. The FBI's lucky to have him, even if he ultimately breaks every single one of their rules for me and puts the fate of the multiverse in jeopardy just because he's a pushover. So anyway, the ITA hallway is exactly as we left it, as it always is, grayer than the grayest gray. But strangely homey now, like that cabin up in Maine that freaked the living shit out of me the first time I stayed there, but became almost welcoming the more I went back. Like a home away from home. Almost. Don't get carried away, Chip. Remember how many times you've almost died in here, Chip. Gigi and Hannah are clapping their hands in excitement and anticipation, so I pull out the journal and write, Nikola, your number one fans are here, waiting. You better come soon, or I think their heads are going to explode. And before I can even start waiting for a written response, the door, the same door we just came through in 2020, whooshes open to another era, the mid-1940s, and the real-life, actual Nikola Tesla steps through. Or more accurately, hobbles through, slouched over, sporting a cane. I wonder how old he is now. It's hard to keep track because time stops in here in the ITA, but proceeds normally in his dimension. Is he 90? 91? I mean, I'm not sure it matters. He's really old either way. Now, when I look close, I hate to say this, he's maybe too old. But he sheds at least a dozen years when he spots Gigi and Hannah, a smile splashing across his face so wide it's reaching back to his ears, and his eyes light up like the grandpa whose granddaughters just scored their first soccer goal.
Old man, old man, old man!
The girls are chanting, hugging his legs and reaching up. He can't possibly pick them up, so instead he rests his cane on the floor and plops down, leaning against the wall next to me and Pete. The girls giggle and show him their imaginary forehead boo-boos, and he kisses them and makes them all go away. While they sit down and snuggle next to him, Tesla turns to me, tussles my hair, and gives me a sly grin.
Master Chip, good to see you. They are getting so big. Do you remember the first time I met Gigi?
Super quick sub-story. The first time Nikola Tesla met Gigi Collins. So the last time Fred let us do this, Gigi and Hannah were just past being babies. They couldn't quite walk yet, so maybe 10 months? Again, with the months, I have no idea. Anyway, Tesla's doting on them, and they're loving it, goo-gooing and ba-baing and having absurd little gibberish conversations with him about quantum string theory or how to make dark matter. And suddenly, Gigi looks like she's having a brainstorm and raises her finger into the air.
Chip, I think your little one is about to speak her first word. I wonder if it will be superconductor, or trigonometry, or electromagnetic.
Gigi reaches out for his hand, totters over to his ear, and whispers,
Shit.
Without even looking, Tesla's hand shoots out a million miles an hour and smacks me.
Chip!
What?
What are you teaching this innocent child? It wasn't me, I swear. I've been really good around her. Perfect, actually, I swear.
Do not lie to me, young man.
I'm not lying. Maybe she picked it up on a TV show or Pete. Yeah, it was Pete. Pete punches me in the shoulder.
Hey, don't throw me under the bus. I'm not teaching your kid how to say shit.
You say shit all the time, like every other word.
Bullshit.
See?
Tesla slams his hand on the wall.
Silence!
And he looks around and something's revealing itself to him, I can tell. His little Tesla coils are burning. But I can't tell what it is until his eyes stop on Bobo. Blink, blink.
You!
Bobo, eyes bigger and sadder than ever, whispers,
Shit bit.
I laugh. I can't help it. Bobo taught Gigi her first word, and it was shit. I pat him on the head, yeah. Kind of proud of him, I'll admit. Dude, what does shit bit even mean?
Enough!
Tesla's ripping pissed now.
You will strike that word from your vocabulary around these children. Do you hear me?
The three of us, even Bobo, nod.
Very well. Now,
he takes a few deep breaths and turns to the girls.
Who would like to hear a story?
They're in complete awe, like he's a god, which of course he is, perfectly silent for the first time in their lives with rapt attention. And Tesla launches into even more super quick sub-sub-story, the story of Arthur the Aardvark. Whoa, Nikola, hold on. Are you talking about the kids' show? There's already an Arthur the Aardvark.
No, there is not.
Yes, there is. I read the books when I was a kid and watched the show. It's from way back in the 70s. Oh, never mind. Continue.
Ahem. Once upon a time, there was an aardvark named Arthur. He ate ants, as all aardvarks do, of course. But he also ate rice pudding.
Gigi and Hannah babble in unison.
Pudda!
Yes.
Now, the other aardvarks scowled and shunned poor Arthur. So Arthur decided to make a huge batch of rice pudding and open a little cafe. And when he served his rice pudding, the other aardvarks exclaimed in glee, This is delicious! And they lifted him on their shoulders and paraded him around the village as a hero.
Gigi and Hannah do the clap hands thing and shimmy around. This is clearly the best story ever told. But me and Peter like, is that it?
Of course that is it.
I swear I was waiting for Arthur to invent a resonant tunneling diode or a micro dark matter time loop or some shit, I mean, stuff. That story was something me and Pete would come up with in college after, partaking.
What is meant by partaking?
Nothing. Okay, kiddos, say your goodbyes to the old man. We gotta get going.
Old man, old man, old man.
Aw, cute. I think they're calling you old man. And don't worry, Nikola. I won't say shit in front of them ever again.
Shit, shit, shit.
Oops. Okay, where the hell was I? I'm like trapped three levels deep in this story. Oh yeah, so we're sitting here again with Tesla, Gigi and Hannah and Bobo surrounding him. They can sort of talk now, so they're chanting,
Story time, story time, story time.
Like they're sitting around the campfire waiting for the tribe's witch doctor to tell them how the Earth Mother created the fires in the sky. And Tesla breaks into another one of his absurd animal stories. This one's about a raccoon that could fly. Gigi and Hannah think it's even better than the aardvark rice pudding story, but even they can't resist the soothing grandpa-like voice of Nikola Tesla and before he can say, "The end," they're fast asleep again. Tesla smiles and whispers, "They really are angels, my friends." He gingerly pushes them aside and rises, silently, kissing his hand and then touching their heads with the kiss. He nods at us, and we understand that this is goodbye, for tonight at least, and he takes the few steps to our home doorway and enters 0000. The little whoosh threatens to wake the kids, but Tesla opens the door ever so slowly, smiles and winks back at us. Then he turns and bends down a little and shuffles back through the open door into 1947 and...
Wait, Gigi, no!
Gigi, suddenly awake, in a flash and a blur, runs right between his legs, giggling. Into 1947. Uh-oh. Tesla turns on his heels back to us, a look of absolute terror in his eyes. The first time I've seen him so afraid. And we whisper the word to each other, the forbidden word we never thought we'd say. Paradox. Pete looks between Tesla and me, puzzled.
Paradox, what is that, your secret word?
Gigi, stop and listen. Come back out here to Daddy, slowly, pretty please. She runs back out and jumps into my arms.
Come, Daddy, come home with old man.
Pete reaches out, grabs my chin, and turns my face to him.
Dude, you're white as a ghost. It's scaring me. What the hell is a paradox?
It's... Nicola, you tell him.
Tesla takes a deep breath.
Mr. Pete, when Chip and I first returned home following the epic battle for the multiverse, after you stayed behind to live with Meg, I explained to Chip that we needed to enter our home dimension separately. You see, we are both from this dimension, but I entered in 1943, and Chip entered in 2015. The interdimensional transfer apparatus cannot resolve that temporal contradiction. Two beings from the same home dimension, but different points on that timeline, cannot enter that home dimension simultaneously. They cannot logically exist at the same point in time. It creates a paradox.
He sighs, defeated.
Gentlemen, the moment she stepped through my legs into my timeline,
he falters and leans against the doorway.
Gigi created a paradox.
Gigi jumps off my lap and bolts through his legs again.
Gigi make paradox.
She points to Hannah.
Hannah make paradox.
So of course Hannah runs into Tesla's hotel room too. I don't know, is she doubling the paradox? Oh great, now they're taking turns running in and out between Tesla's legs.
Gigi make paradox. Hannah make paradox. Gigi make paradox. Hannah make paradox.
Stop.
The girls freeze in place. Pete stands up, pulls them out, holding them back as they try to create more paradoxes. Nicola, is a paradox bad?
Yes, Master Pete. Very bad.
How bad is very bad? Tesla looks around for something simple to illustrate how bad it is. I mean, it's me and Pete he's trying to explain this to. Gotta keep it basic. And suddenly he wanders off into his hotel room. Hey, Nicola, where are you going? Oh, he's back, holding a sleeve of Ritz crackers. Ritz crackers? Cool, that doesn't seem very bad. He shakes his head, holds up the sleeve horizontally.
Gentlemen, imagine the first cracker in this sleeve is 1947, and the last cracker in this sleeve is 2020. Gigi just stepped onto the first cracker, 1947, even though she belongs on the last cracker, 2020. A paradox. It cannot exist. There is no logical mathematical solution to a paradox.
So?
In order to resolve something that cannot exist, the paradox will attempt to bring Gigi back to the year she belongs, from 1947 forward to 2020. From the first cracker to the last cracker, like this.
He smashes the sleeve together, so the first cracker meets the last cracker. The whole thing splits open and all of the crackers dissolve to dust.
And what are we left with?
Crumbs?
Even less than crumbs, Chip. It is a total collapse of the timeline. Of all the timelines throughout the multiverse, we are left with nothing.
Yikes. So what do we do? Just stand here and wait for a few minutes to see if we turn to crumbs? It takes a few moments. Tesla is still in shock trying to figure something out that can't be figured out, but then I see his brain kicking into overdrive. Oh yeah, he's thinking of something. He's always thinking of something.
always coming up with a plan. I breathe a little easier, knowing that the next word out of his mouth will probably make this whole mess go away. Yes.
That's it, Nicola? Yes? Yes what? Yes, you have a solution?
Yes, we wait for a few minutes to see if the entire multiverse collapses.
But...
And for the first time in my life, I can't speak. I don't have a wise-ass retort or a blubbering, tear-filled rant. I mean, what can I say? What's left to say? I look down at my beautiful kid and Pete's beautiful kid, these innocent little angels me and my idiot friend have put into harm's way, the ultimate harm's way. And then a thought even more terrifying than that pops into my head and I manage to croak to Pete, "Dude, if the multiverse collapses, Julie and Meg are gonna be so pissed."